Welcome to Great Photography. This is Daniel Sig. In today's episode, we'll have Nina Welsh Kling back on Create Photography. Nina is a New York City-based street photographer originally from Germany. We'll talk about her new book. All right. Nina, welcome back to Create Photography. I'm very excited to speaking with you again.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm really happy to be back and to get a chance to talk to you again.
Awesome. Awesome. For our listeners, the previous episode with Nina can be found wherever you get your podcast. You can also find it on my website, danielsigphotography.com/episode031. I think it was the 31st episode. So anyway, we had a great discussion back then, and I'm sure we'll have a great discussion today as well. Great to have you back. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring you back is that one of the projects we did discuss, Duologues, actually now has been released as a book, which is exciting.
It's very exciting, yes.
Maybe, you know, if you don't mind, maybe we'll just start with the project first, you know, the Duologues, and if you could just tell me a little bit about that project.
So basically, Duologue, first of all, the title, because people often think it's a made-up title, actually means it's a play for two actors, so for two people talking to each other. So it's not a monologue, but it's two people talking. Mm-hmm. And the project started with a class assignment, and I kind of realized that by pairing two photos or two of my street photos on one page, the story that was created became a very different story than when you view one singular image. And it became this obsession where I don't even know, do you want me to talk about how I create the duologues?
Yeah, that'll be great. I think,
Right, which is kind of a crazy, people always ask like, well, how do you pair them? And it's quite a long process. So initially, so the diptych structure was kind of the outline of my puzzle, and then I assembled all these stacks of photos, the endless amount of moments that I had captured, and I realized that there were hats that I always was attracted to, smoking, steam, uniforms. That there was a slew of topics that I would always touch upon. So I kind of put them into their own stacks. And then I said, if I take one of these photos, can I find a pair that takes it beyond the one photo? So then I looked for graphics, I looked for details, I looked for color connections, but then I went beyond that. So there's a lot of pairs that are actually more a narrative where initially people's like, well, I don't get it, because it's a journey through the pairs, especially when you see the book. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, so the first pairs are kind of easy, where it's a graphic connection, they're black and white, but when it comes to the more narrative connection, I leave it open to the viewer, and I'm interested in whoever views the pairs to take the two photos and create their own story. Mm-hmm. And so the way I find them is like I have these collections of photographs, collections in my Lightroom, but collections in my head. And so when I view one of the photos, I kind of go through them in this memory game and look for things that I feel would work. And then I kind of try them out, I print them out. Sometimes the first one sticks, sometimes it takes 20 or 30 tries to find a good pair. And I can't even tell you why some of them stick with me, because mm-hmm. it's just kind of a gut feeling. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like the connection makes sense to me, maybe not anyone else. but in the end, when you view the pairs, you should be able to create your story. And so this is kind of the whole idea of the book and the duologues, that it's this walk through experiences that you can add into. And also every time you look at it, there's something else you can discover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really interesting. And actually, first of all, I think this is a super cool idea for a project. So, I mean, even for, you know, maybe others should do that too. But yeah, this is a really cool. I love that idea of the duologues. You know, I know some people work in, you know, there's the triptychs too, right? Or you can have three. But yeah, this is wonderful. So I'm curious now. So it started with an assignment, but then you started to see those connections.
Yep.
Is it, and you continue to expand your own body of work, of course. Mm-hmm. So was that always, did you always find those pairs, I guess, post hoc? Or did you sometimes actually, somewhere on the streets of New York City or wherever you were, did you sometimes think, oh, you know, this could be an interesting one for this picture I really like, or, you know what I mean?
No, I exactly know what you mean. And I do not go out shooting thinking I'm looking for a partner for a photograph.
Got it.
But I do think that it is easier to pair with a more abstract photo sometimes. So a person or some kind of gesture is sometimes easier to pair with a wider open photograph. So if it's a little less specific, it becomes a more open-ended story. So I do not specifically go out and shoot. I've always shot the same way. I go out, I find interesting light, I find an interesting scene, and it's kind of a gut feeling when you go out shooting.
Mm-hmm.
But when I assemble them, it is this exercise and this game in my head, and it's reassembled once I'm home, and it's kind of a theoretical project. It becomes no longer like a photography. It's more like in my head.
Yep.
What stories I want to create. So it's kind of, I know a lot of photographers, and I just had this discussion, they go out and they need to kind of beforehand know what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a street photographer, you never know what you're looking for. You're always just kind of reacting and framing what you see and think is interesting to you.
Mm-hmm.
But the pairing of it, you have much more control over, and the story that you want to tell.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. So, and I found it also interesting that you mentioned, so now I'm actually quite interested in getting the book. Hopefully others are too. But, you know, I'm very curious.
I'm shipping them this week. So hopefully.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
They held up in customs, so.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wonderful. So, yeah. And we'll link to your, yeah, we'll talk about that later too, where to find it and so forth. But so going back to, you know, you said when you started out, maybe the connections were, you know, more obvious, you know, like a red and a red, or, you know, whatever, right? We can just just imagine that there's some obvious connections, or a triangle or some geometry. So when we, and then as you, would you say as the project grew and you continued, did it become maybe more nuanced or more, you know, subtle, maybe those connections?
Yes.
Okay.
And I also, you know, I also, especially in a book, I wanted to make sure that the different connections and not a lot of repetition.
Okay.
So that when you go through the book and kind of look at the connections, you know, so there's some of them that are easier, then they're more narrative. And then there's this humor. So I kind of, you know, so there's like this curve in the story, less so much in the layout of the book, but in your travels through the individual pages, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. No, it does. No, that's great. And so that kind of brings me a little bit into the overall creating, asking you a little bit about the creative process that I'm very curious about of putting the book together, because clearly there is not just the, you know, the pairs, and, you know, we just put a bunch of pairs and, you know, and just put them in somehow and the book is done. It's obviously much more involved. And so you kind of already hinted at that a little bit, right? That
yeah.
you kind of tried to maybe have a little. So can you maybe tell me and our listeners a little bit about how you went about maybe the that process of some people call it sequencing, and kind of how this whole book gets put together, I guess, from that standpoint.
So the pairs, so when the book got accepted in terms of its concept, I mean, it was about 20 pairs that I just showed.
Okay.
I think there's 46 or close to 46 or 47 pairs in the book. So the struggle was like, how should you make the book interesting through the layout? And so the sequencing was pretty much set in terms of the pairs.
Okay.
But then it was kind of interesting because it went through a lot of different sequences. And I don't think anybody who sees the book will feel that if it would have been a different sequence, that it would have made a big difference. It made a big difference to me, and it's very subtle.
Okay.
But, and I mean, people can, I would love to hear about this. And I mean, once the book goes out, I'm really curious to get feedback. But it ended up, the biggest question was, should the pairs be, they're all the same size in terms of the layout and how they're on the page. So it's kind of a walk through. Page after page, kind of like how I'm rhythmically walking through the streets.
Yeah.
And the question was, should there have been some pairs that should have been bigger or smaller, or should we have blown them up and put them on separate pages? But in the end, I felt, and that was definitely a discussion we kind of got stuck on, you know, how do you sequence that and how do you make the book interesting? But then I felt hopefully that the pages, and it's not such a long and big book, are interesting enough to feed you through the sequencing. But I also couldn't justify, and I'm a very methodical person, I think, that some of the pairs should be bigger for no less than just for an aesthetic point of view. I wanted them, there should have been a reason why one pair should be bigger, and I want to highlight it. And in my mind, there wasn't a good enough reason, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. And I guess the follow-up question on that first of all, are they all in the same format in terms of crop factors? So is it the same? Are they all landscape, or do you have some?
They're all vertical.
They're all vertical, so all the same.
They're
so from
the
that
same.
Standpoint, it's fairly straightforward.
It's very straightforward.
Yeah. But I do understand what you mentioned, right? That you could argue, well, maybe to make it somewhat interesting, maybe it would be cool to have some a little different or whatever. But then, yeah. I also understand the why.
And I think I come from an architecture school. Every design decision had to have a reason. Had, you know, it didn't matter. It could be whatever your reason was, but it had to have a reason. And so to just kind of say, oh, that would look better. And I just couldn't go there. And that was definitely a struggle. And I mean, I had a lot of freedom. I mean, the book is published by Kera. And I worked with a wonderful designer, Tobias Becker. And, you know, they understood my struggle and it went back and forth. And, you know, it's like, what's the right decision? And I think that's the hard thing about a book. Because you know it's going to be in print and that's it. And it's scary.
Yeah.
It's very yeah. scary.
You have it's kind of like when I don't know if you ever remodeled your home or
yes.
bought a home. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's kind of like that, right? You have to make all these decisions that you don't even thought. I mean, you didn't even think about the color of
exactly.
this particular whatever, right? And the
yes.
hardware over there and the faucet over here. And so, yeah.
So it's like, you know, like even deciding on the font.
Yep. Yep.
Like the font of a book.
Yep. Yeah.
Each one of these decisions becomes like you lay awake at night and you're like, is that the right thing? And I tend to double guess or double like doubt myself on decisions, and that makes it even harder.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you bring up the font. In fact, I talked about bookmaking with Daniel Milnor. I don't know if you know him, but he works for he's a former professional photographer, but I had him on the podcast a couple times, but he's working for Blurb now as a creative evangelist. But he actually has a very cool YouTube channel where he talks about different things, including, you know, bookmaking. But we talked a lot about, you know, those concepts like sequencing and so forth. And he did say, for example, you know, font is its own world. I mean,
yep.
there are people who are I actually find it really interesting. I've done, you know, I've been involved in a couple websites that, you know, I helped with, and I find the font a huge, I mean, it's a huge deal.
Yep.
What kind of a font you're using. I kind of understand how this is a big decision for you as well.
Right. So every little piece, and there isn't that much writing in the book, and, you know, it's a photo book. I mean, I have three essays.
Yep.
One by Jeff Mermelstein, one by Christopher Shelia, who is my mentor and teacher, and then by Gulnara Samuilova.
Mm-hmm.
And it all of these pieces that have to come together to make this book, it's not something I really thought about before, and it is my mm-hmm. first book, and, you know, it was kind of this dream to create a book that was kind of in the far distance as a goal, and mm-hmm. then when it actually happened, I was over the moon excited, and then it was really scary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is great. I'm like, oh my god, now what?
Now there's a lot of work. And so, yeah, and so I'm curious about, so you said you had this goal, you know, maybe not defined, you know, maybe a more undefined goal, but you wanted to do a book at some point. But when did you actually make the decision? Or, you know, obviously it sounded like you had a project proposal that eventually got accepted, right?
So sometimes things just fall into place. And for me, I had applied to Review Santa Fe,
okay.
which is a portfolio review where you apply, and I think they accept about 100 photographers a year, and you show it, you pick from a list of portfolio reviewers. And so I looked, because of COVID, it was postponed a year, so it was exactly a year ago. And so I picked two book publishers, I picked two galleries, I picked some just where I felt I would get some good feedback. And the two publishers, so the first one said, this is not a project we would ever publish, which, you know, 2 minutes into your portfolio review, you're like, okay.
Okay.
And how is the weather where you come from?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. How's your family?
How about the conversation stopper?
Which, you know, I mean, I appreciated the frankness, and I understand
sure.
it didn't feel devastating, because I know it's not going to be for everyone. And but then, so the second publisher was Alexa Becker, and she really liked the project. She's like, you know, sent me a PDF, and 5 days later I heard that Kara wanted to publish it. So it just kind of fell into place for me, almost to the point where I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Really? This is happening?
I mean, this is amazing. You know, I've done, I actually know an author who's a writer, and she published now, I think she's up to now publishing her second book with the big publisher. But, you know, before that, I mean, we talked about a lot about the rejection. I mean, in writing, and you probably know that too, it's like unbelievable right. how much rejection you get. And I don't know in photo books how that works. I mean, part of it is probably, and we'll talk about that more, I'm sure, but it's about the financing too and stuff like that. But nevertheless, right, that this is pretty amazing. I mean, so you got it basically two tries and you got, yep. you had a match.
You know, the financing, yeah. So when the enthusiasm was quite dampened and, you know, that should be part of the discussion about a book. Mm-hmm. As in photo books, it's not a world where you or the publisher will make a lot of money. And you have to invest a lot of your own money into it. So this is why you see the Kickstarter campaigns. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of money that, you know, you kind of have to swallow and say, is that where I want to invest in myself? Mm-hmm. Yep. But then, you know, we invest in our kids' educations. I always say, you know, I have two college-age kids. We yep. don't think about their college tuition.
Right.
But when it came to publishing my book, you know, should I invest in my own education and future? Mm-hmm. And yep. as a parent or, you know, when there's all other expenses, it definitely was a little bit of a damper. I mean, my family helped me out and, you know, then you have to sell books. Yep. I have a lot of books to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it true? And I think I recently talked to somebody about this too, or heard it on a podcast. I don't remember now either, but, that with photo books nowadays, we're 2022 right now, so almost 2023. It is more common that you have to kind of self-finance a big part of it so that the publishers are not necessarily helping out a lot. I mean, you know, it seems like a general statement, but and I don't know if that's true or not. But
you know, I don't know. I think there is a wider range, but I heard that even very famous authors that mm-hmm. are very well known still have to put a lot of their own money in to kind of have control over your book.
Okay.
It's kind of the stark secret of book publishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I think there you know, I guess there's a lot of dark secrets in the world of art, but we've become very cynical, I think, because artists, we always have to invest in ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's gallery viewing or framing or printing, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even if, you know, if somebody's interested in your work and your project has had some publicity, it's hard. Mm-hmm. To finance your the art.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, right? I mean, you see that in with, you know, people who, you know, let's just say they want to also, you know, make this one of their main income streams, right? Which is with right. pure art is certainly not easy, but you know, so you see a lot of photographers, even I recently talked to a very well-known photographer and she's still doing another job on the side, and she's an ambassador for a big camera brand, you know, this and that, and you know, nevertheless you find that, at least in my discussions, right, they have to do other things to generate income streams to kind of,
yeah,
you know, whether it's you monetize some YouTube channel or you do workshops or you start, you know, obviously selling prints is maybe a more obvious one, but even that is not easy. And how do you market your things? And, you know, all these things, it seems.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the workshop, I mean, that's something that I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it might be just my own insecurity. It's like, well, what, you know, I'm thinking, what do I have to offer to people? You know, mm-hmm. why would they want to take my workshop? Mm-hmm. And how can I teach them to find their own voice. And I think you really have to, you know, instead of just saying, okay, I'm going to teach because it's an income, but I want to be thoughtful about that and say, you know, what can I offer that other people might not and make it worth their time to listen to me?
Yeah.
So it's always a big debate, but yes, the financial side of it. And again, there'd be another podcast.
Yes.
In the end, like when you have the book, and I mean, I just came back from Paris Photo and got to sign books there.
Oh, and, nice.
You know, it, like when you look around and you see who is signing books. I mean, it's the who's who of photography. And you look around and I'm pinching myself and I'm thinking, wow, I'm here. Like my book is here amongst this incredible work that's out in the world. And there's so many talented, amazing photographers.
Yeah.
And like, how did I get here? So it, you know, it is definitely a moment of pause and joy.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't just make it all sound gloom and doom.
No. Well, and you raise a good point, right? Like when we talked about the workshops, I mean, I think even, you know, and when you, it's great that you're thoughtful about this, right? Because and frankly, I think other people at your stage of, you know, development, when I judge that obviously a little bit, you know, from the outside, I'm not you. So, but, they would do workshops at that point, but, you know, it's great that you're really thoughtful about it and you're thinking about, well, you know, what do I offer? What would be unique? My guess would be you would probably offer a lot because, you know, first of all, you know, you would do it in a city that is the city of street photography. And then, so that alone is probably already close to invaluable. And then, you know, of course it is also about, you know, it would be about how you would do it. And, you know, that doesn't mean that it has to be how others do it. They have to, you're right. Ultimately everybody has maybe to find their own voice and that's a journey, but.
Right. And you want, you know, if people, or if you take workshops, I'm not a fan when, yes, you do show them how you should, but how do you encourage people to find their own view of, you know, the same things we all look at?
No.
Like, how can you step out of seeing like everyone else? And it's not it's not an easy journey.
No.
In the end, you know what? In the end, it isn't that hard because if you're true to yourself and how you see and you believe in it and you kind of stick with it and you surround yourself with people that support you.
Yeah.
I think you know, it's easier to find.
I totally agree. And you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, even when I started the podcast, you know, and I had at some point I was even thinking about, you know, maybe I should do YouTube. And then I was kind of like watching some others and I kind of almost and I never pursued the YouTube, even though I recorded a few episodes, but I was totally not myself.
Right.
I was just like completely and looked at this and I thought that doesn't even make any sense. Right. And so I don't want to do that. And so then with the podcast, I just decided I do it. You know, I'm being myself. I'm not being anybody else. And that's basically it. And that's so. And of course, that's important for photography or whatever, right? And so that always brings me back to Instagram and things like that, where, you know, you get presented the kind of same work or similar work, and you do not see, and that's just probably because I recently read a piece of another photographer about this, and, you know, I assume that's true, but anyway, so the point being is that, you know, we don't get exposed to vastly different things. So I don't know that that's a good thing, but for me personally, I just decided, I'm digressing a little bit on the social media stuff, but I decided I'm just not going to spend time on it. For me, it's just not worth it personally, but that was just a choice, also a time choice for me, time management choice.
Right. The Instagram it's always been kind of an, like a love-hate relationship. I think we all do. I mean, Instagram has been good for me or to me, because I've had exposure through Instagram that I don't think I would have ever had otherwise. Or, you know, it's like, how do you promote your work or more people see it? And I've had people contacting me through Instagram. But it is, you know, it's kind of a time suck. So people shouldn't think that, you know, having lots of followers is something that just happens really quickly. It's you, you answer, you find people, you, it's what you decide you spend your time on. Now I just started doing reels, which is a whole different learning curve. Just to kind of keep up. You know, doing something new. And I mean, I always enjoy learning. So whenever I have a new task, it's actually is kind of exciting.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, and right. And just don't get me wrong, right? I'm not saying Instagram is great, right? I mean, I'm all for it, but I think it's just like the perspective is just to look at it for what it is, right? I mean, it is ultimately, it is something where, you know, that helps also the company itself, but it may help other creatives too as a platform, right? And for that, I think it's awesome, right?
But I think to your point that there is so much sameness because you can't help. I think if you see somebody that's successful and think, oh, it works for them, and unconsciously, when you go out and shoot, you kind of try to imitate them, which I think is fine in the beginning, because that's how we learn and we look at people that we are inspired by.
Right.
But then at some point, you have to step away from that and say, you know, what is my vision and what's different? And I do remember I tried really hard the kind of layered street photography approach. Where, you know, the frame is filled and there's something in the foreground and fragments coming in. And that's just not how I see. And so even so, I tried really hard. My teacher's like, you know, there's something missing. And I'm like, but that's impossible. So, but that's just not how I see. And at some point, you know, it worked in my favor because it's the way I see does set it apart a little bit, or I hope it does, from what or how other people shoot the street. I mean, I'm always kind of, I feel like on a little bit different in my view and how I see.
Right.
But it's worked well for me.
Yeah, exactly. And right, as long as you're authentic in that sense, right, then I think it, and even that, right, I mean, we can even argue, what does that even mean? You know, it's just like, but it's, if it's, if it works, let's just call it works for you, you know, and, you know, maybe not give it an additional label, but anyway, yeah, I know. Sorry, I digressed a little bit.
No, but it's also like when people would comment and say, you know, I immediately knew it was your photo. You know, when that started to happen more often, it's like, oh, well, Nina, I knew it was you. You know, I felt that, wow, I guess even so, I didn't realize it early on. But I had started to create my own language or my my own perspective of New York or the world, how I see it. But that just either happened, doesn't happen, and it shouldn't stop you, because in the end, we all just go out because we love shooting. Or I hope that's what you do. I never thought that, you know, I'd be sitting in podcasts talking about my work or talking about a book or any of that. I went out because I love being out.
You loved it.
And I still do. My happy times is when I'm out shooting, even if it's just 20 minutes. Like everything else kind of falls off my brain. It's just I'm there in the moment. I'm focused on what I see. And I mean, I laugh. This is like a personal side note. Like I actually don't. I'm very noise sensitive, which is crazy considering I live in New York.
You live in New York City.
So let's say if I go to Times Square and I have to get there, it totally overwhelms me. But if I go with my camera, I don't hear anything. I just kind of see the people. I see people moving and the crowdedness does not bother me.
That's great.
So this single focus on, you know, looking through, you know, the camera, seeing the world through the camera, just creates this kind of otherness in my head. And
That's wonderful. That actually reminds me, you know, when I love different genres, but landscape is one that I keep going back to. And so sometimes I feel like I'm also in my happy place when I'm
right
doing, you know, photographing. And sometimes, you know, we just, before we started recording, we talked, you know, I live in Minnesota. So, I mean, I go sometimes out in January, you know, somewhere in the North Shore, and it may be, you know, minus 20 Celsius. And I just, you know, of course you're dressed appropriately, but yes, you kind of forget about all the,
yeah,
you're just in the zone. You're just in, yep, the moment. I mean, absolutely. I actually really, truly love that about photography, and yeah, when you're enjoying it. So it's great to hear that you're doing that too.
And you're right. Like, even when I go out shooting during blizzards, mm-hmm, yeah, you are cold. But for those, you know, as long as you can stand it for the 2-3 hours, you know, you are dressed appropriately. I have heated gloves, which I can recommend to anybody.
Yep.
Buy them on Amazon. It's a battery operated, and they're kind of like a lining for motorcycle, I guess, for riding a motorcycle.
Hmm.
Oh, and that's cool. You know, that kind of keeps your hands warm.
Yep.
And I get so excited to like see what's going on, and it just, you forget it's cold and snowy other, yeah, and really miserable for at least, yeah, a little while, and then, yeah, you go back home, yeah, and you're like, oh my god, I can't, yeah, believe I went yeah, outside.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's great to hear. Well, I want to bring us back a little bit to the book, and I have a couple more questions around the book project. So we talked a little bit about, so you had some essays in there. We talked a little bit about the font, the sequencing. So, and we talked about, you know, many of the decisions you had to make. Tell me a little bit more about maybe the decisions around, for example, do you have captions, or is it just, are the pictures just?
No, the pictures are just the pictures.
Okay.
But I feel that my photos, I would like to think them of kind of this timeless journey through New York. And some of the photos are, there's one or two where people's like, oh my God, I can't identify this. But I feel like if I give you what it is, you kind of give up. I want you to come back and really try hard to kind of see what I saw. And maybe you don't know what it is, but I think that's okay. I feel like it kind of gives you more freedom in your imagination to travel somewhere else where I couldn't have controlled it. I'm just giving you kind of the entry to what I see, but then you can take it to a whole different level.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I also, you know, like one thing that when you go out shooting street and you take a photo, very often you come home and you discover things that you did not see while you're shooting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'll send you one of the pairs, and there's a photo of a gentleman that has a dollar sign in his hand. I did not see the dollar sign. I kind of chose that location because the light and people were interesting. And but so there's always these discoveries you can make afterwards, and you learn from them. And so the pairs become my discovery, but hopefully it becomes a discovery for people who view the photos as well.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the more you look at them, especially the more complex pairs, the more you can discover.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is super cool because I could even see something like this, you know, you show it to children, you know, who are studying art and say, you know, what do you guys see? Do you see, where are the, you know, where are the parallels? So what do you, I don't know.
No, but, it's funny you say that because my brother is a professor of finance.
Okay.
And I sent him some of the pairs early on. And he's like, I don't get it.
Oh.
And I said to him, can you put your daughter on, who's like, at the time was 5-6 years old? And they immediately said, oh, you know, this is what I see, and saw connections. And it was
so interesting.
It was so interesting how creativity, well, there was actually study. It's like, I'm totally digressing to different subjects.
No,
but
that's good.
But there's been a study where they gave kids a, not a safety pin, like a clip, like a paper clip. Mm-hmm. And they asked the kids, young kids, to do different things with them. And so the kids came up with so many different ideas. And then they gave the paper clips to older kids in 10th, 12th grade. And they came up with one solution. It was a paper clip. So somewhere along the line, this imagination got lost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the same to the connection. So yes, you know, some kids will see very different stories, and probably it would be probably really interesting to show the pairs to kids and say, hey, what is your story? And kind of do, you know, a write-up of what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know right from wrong, and they don't care if it's judged. They just kind of see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, thanks for sharing that too. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, it's just it was just something I thought, you know, it could be really interesting to maybe it could be used, you know, educationally at some point, or at least similar exercises. It's but you're right, and some people may we may lose it, right? Or kids may lose it as they grow older, and some people just don't, as you said, your brother may not. He just thinks differently, right?
Right.
So it's just different.
But I think especially when you go, when you go through the sequence, it starts to challenge you more.
Yeah.
And so it's like, wait, like the other ones were easy and I can see it, but why can't I see it now?
Yeah.
And you kind of have to take a step back and say, let me see, you know, what are the connections? Is it could just be a color, and then it could just be a feeling, and then it could just be, it could be so many different things.
Yep. Yep.
But because it starts kind of very concrete, people expect it, or, you know, I think people or whoever views it thinks that that's how it's going to be, but then it would be really boring.
Yeah.
I think it would be really boring.
So going back to the sequencing discussion we had, you did say ultimately the sequence was not as critical yet. You know, for example, there might have been some examples, or I assume, right, and if I recall your work, there's some that are more, let's call them explicit or more clear, maybe more obvious, maybe is the better term, and others are less obvious. But besides from that, did you ultimately have sequences that are kind of tied together?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of them.
Okay. There are a bunch of them.
Yes,
okay.
there is pages, and, you know, it was going like how you would experience walking through. So maybe sometimes you would just see a detail, and then it goes from something not concrete to something more concrete, to something more lyrical, to something more emotional. So I really tried to sequence it that it's this journey that has highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back again, I think, to the fact that the pages stays the same, but hopefully your journey through it kind of keeps you interested enough to kind of go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, in the end, the sequence was very important to me. I guess to make this clear, it was very important to me, but I'm not sure if one or two pairs would have been swapped out, it would have made such a big difference, but I slaved over what is the right sequence and what feels right as a journey through the book.
And you mentioned, Tobias Becker helped you with this. Was he helping you with the sequencing as well? Or was it was it ultimately your decision?
It was ultimately my decision, but at some point I felt, you know, I needed a fresh pair of eyes. Yep. And so poor Tobias, like I held him on this, you know, gave him a little bit of a leash, and then I'm like, I don't know. But in the end, like, I needed confirmation that the sequence works and that he feels that it was a good, that we were in a good place. And you know what? If I would have had another year, it would have changed probably.
Yeah.
There would have been new pairs added in.
Right.
You know, the last pair, I mean, I think one of the pairs, the last photo was taken in Easter weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, this is a work in progress. So you just kind of had to do like this you know, draw a line and say, okay, this is where we're at right now, and this is where the mm-hmm. sequence is, and live with the decision.
Yeah. and speaking of maybe themes, I mean, an obvious one, well, not, I shouldn't say, I take that back, but a distinction could be black and white and color, right? Do you have both in
both. The book?
Yeah. Okay. Did you try to group those at all, or was that not really a consideration?
That was never an option because I felt that my life moves kind of black and white and color.
Okay.
And my journey is kind of black and white in color, and some of them work better in color and say something different than the one in black and white. And I think it works well.
Okay.
Again.
So you can,
when you see it, you can.
Right. Well, no.
We can have a crit session.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
We have a follow-up.
We have a follow-up crit session.
A debrief.
Exactly.
So it wasn't a consideration in terms of, we don't need to group the color, or here's Mm-mm. some group. No, not at all. Okay, got it. Okay. No,
because,
that's good.
Right, because my journey is through the city, or through my world it's just a walk through, you know, literally a walk through the city. So it's like sometimes you see black and white, sometimes it's, you know, darker, lighter. There's not... Oh, it's not all color and it's all black and white.
Yeah, yep. That makes perfect sense. Yeah, and I wasn't suggesting you needed to do that at all. I just thought, I was just curious about, because I remembered you had both in the original duologues.
And I did have, I think, one portfolio review once, and it was suggested that I should make a decision in black and white and color.
Hmm.
To be more consistent.
For the project itself.
Oh, and it was early on in the project.
Interesting.
And I decided that I think it's okay to have both.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because ultimately, right, it's your decision. And that's how you see it as you just described, right? You see it in both and it works. Yeah. You basically Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. So let's talk a little bit more about the collaboration. So we talked about Tobias and, you know, that collaboration. You had several people contribute in writing. What else was there in terms of collaboration in this book project?
Well, Chris Giglio, one of the authors who has been my teacher for years and mentor. So I would always in panic say, oh, can we have a quick meeting? And what do you think? You know, so I always had these kind of check-ins along the mm-hmm. way, because he is a person that really knew the project and really knew mm-hmm. the essence of what the pairs were about and how I went through the pairings. And I mean, that's been going on for 3 years. So that was very important to me. Yep. And, you know, I'm still in class, so I would show them in class and there would be discussions about them. It didn't just kind of happen in the last year or how long the book took. It was a discussion that's been going on for 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And that's why I felt, you know, the pairs that are in the book, I felt strongly about. There are other pairs that didn't make it, but it's just kind of this line at that's right now here and there, like here and where I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I still love. Like, I've been going out shooting a lot of street photos lately, and I enjoy it. I'm working on another project, and so I go back and forth.
Hmm.
But it's
Is the duologue still going on in that sense? Okay. So you just keep going. Okay. Okay. Oh, that's cool. And what's the other, if you can share?
No. You can. The other one, it's called Rallentando.
Okay.
And it started during COVID, I guess the second year of COVID, where I felt, okay, I can't really go that close to people. What happens? Usually I shoot with the 23 millimeter, like a crop. So it's a 35. What happens if I use a longer lens? And I started shooting, and it became these painterly, kind of more blurry, very different from how I usually shoot. And it's been, I mean, it was actually shown in a show at the beginning of the year, but now I'm revamping the whole, again, I have about 400 portraits of people. And the idea was that when you walk on the street, when you come home, we're so not in tune with what we see. Mm-hmm. So we come home with these fragments of people in color that are blurred in our memory. But also the idea that people don't pay attention to me. I'm shooting with a long lens, and
right.
I'm very close to people. And people usually don't care.
At least in New York, right?
At least in New York. And when you when you go to when you go to my website, I mean, I'm really redoing it right now in terms of how I want to show this body of work.
Yeah.
But people look at me, and people also, I've noticed that people are beautiful. Like, it doesn't matter who I've been shooting this way, in this kind of blurry, mm-hmm. romantic, painterly way. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful. Like, I'm in love with all of my subjects. These are strangers that just spend mm-hmm. a second, or not even a second, a fraction of a second, just kind of rushing by me.
And may I ask, so on that note, right, there's, I know in some geographies, and we may have talked about this the last time, but I'm always curious, it's a little bit more of a mundane question, but it relates to the rights of the, you know, in certain geographies where you may sometimes have to ask for permission and stuff like that. Obviously, is that something that's, is it almost a non-issue in New York City, would you say?
It's a non-issue in New York.
Okay.
In terms of legal, I mean, it always comes back to how, you know, how you feel, what is right for you and how you should shoot. Like, I am never hidden. People see me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if they really want to avoid me, they could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm also, I think I'm non-threatening.
Yep.
I'd like to think that.
Yep.
And then I also always say, when people's like, oh, when people get mad, I said, you know, if you're genuine with people, and if somebody walks by and gets upset, is like, oh my God, did you just take my picture? I'm, you know, I really don't want this. I said, you know, you looked beautiful with the light hitting your hair, and you look stunning. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I captured. And people's faces start to change from angry to like, oh, wow, really? Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
And I don't know. I enjoy that. Because mm-hmm. then I feel I've given something back. I mean, I'm not just mm-hmm. on the street. And also, right. I don't think I'm trying to show people in a negative way.
Right, right. Yep.
I'm not making fun of people.
Yep, yep.
I mean, there's humor, but not in a vicious
right.
intent.
Yeah, you're not trying to portray them in bad light, so to say.
No, and when you look, you look at Valentine, you can email me or you can call me and let me know. But I do feel that I feel this warmth towards people, that mm-hmm. they really are beautiful. And it's so nice mm-hmm. to, you know, I wish people would see, you know, because they're street candid portraits,
mm-hmm.
it would be nice to find them and give them a portrait of themselves, which is painterly. Right. And I think people would view and would feel, you know, they would feel positive about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or not.
No. Oh, well, yeah, right. Well, it's interesting. I don't know if you, there's this podcast called Hidden Brain. I don't know if you ever listened to Shankar Vedantam, but he has a very big podcast, and he has, it's always psychological subjects, but so I listen to some of, you know, when I have time or commute or whatever. But he has one theme that he was covering was around, you know, we always think people think worse of us than they truly do. And there's a lot of research to support that, which is kind of interesting. You wouldn't, it's not necessarily intuitive, but it's it kind of speaks to also, you know, of course, when you take picture, what you just said, right? When you take a picture, but then also kind of follow up with, well, you know, the light looked great, right. You looked great, and you know, so of course, then you're, because they probably think, oh, you know, this photographer thinks I look weird,
right,
and, you know, took that, you know, whatever, right? So it kind of, maybe it makes sense, but it's, you know, and I've, honestly, if I personally also prefer to be behind the camera, so I, you know, I wouldn't know how
I
would
too.
Respond either, right? So I wouldn't probably, I certainly wouldn't be aggressive. I'm not an aggressive person, but, you know, I may ask, well, you know, what are your plans? What are you doing with this? Or, you know, or, yeah.
Few people stop me. And, you know, with the longer lens, I mean, it's 100 and, what am I even shooting with? 135, I think.
Okay.
And being close to people, some people will actually stop and talk to me, and I always enjoy that. I mean, I do enjoy. Yeah. I show them, you know, I pull it up on my website, and I show them mm-hmm. the effect, and that it really isn't about them in an yeah. odd way. It is about them, but it really is just more about how people rush by, how people mm-hmm. don't notice little things. Like I just shot, and it was somebody eating a banana, and I just kind of caught the banana in the hand. Like all these little fragments that mm-hmm. we are almost not conscious anymore while we're walking, where most right. people have an earphone in. So I try not to yes. have people on cell phones. I try not to have people on
right.
Plugged in, but people, are, you know, nobody listens to the noises around them.
Mm-hmm.
Or very few do. They listen to their music. I mean, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was an interest. Yeah. It's been a very interesting experiment, and I enjoy working on two different bodies of work.
Yeah,
and
that's cool. And so the portraits, if I understand that correctly, you said they're candid. So it's not like something like where, you know, sometimes people refer to street photographs as a way, or sorry, street portraits.
No,
you know, you ask somebody,
right.
oh, can I take your portrait? You look really great. You know, blah blah blah, and then do it. So that's not what
no.
you do.
They're shot very much the way I shoot for the duologues.
Okay.
But in a very different way. I mean, I think you can tell it's the same photographer, but it's very different.
Okay.
Some of them look like, of course, we're talking about photos. Now, in your mind, it'll be interesting. You know, anybody who has comments and goes to my website and looks at the portraits, I would love to hear if, you know, what you envision and how that matched what you looked at.
Yeah,
because yeah. you know, you're not seeing it, so you let
right.
me know.
Right.
I you know, post yeah. it, please, and let me know yeah. that what yeah. I described, if that's anything, matches mm-hmm. what you will see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. So and so you have so obviously this is on your website.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that work, I assume, some mm-hmm. of it is on Instagram, right?
None of it is on Instagram, actually.
Oh, it's not on Instagram
mm-mm.
yet. Okay, got it. Okay.
Cool. Not the new body, because
okay.
I mean, I've shown some in the stories, but not as much in
okay.
because it's very different.
Very different. Okay, so you keep that kind of consistent
yeah,
for
I haven't
now.
Quite
yep, yep,
figured out
yep, yep.
how to present it, and I'm working on that also.
Yep. Oh, that's cool. I want to go back to one, and I also want to make sure you're okay on time, but I have a couple more questions.
Please, yes, I'm fine on time.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody wants to hear more of my story.
No, I surely hope so. I do. At least one
okay,
person.
You and I.
So one term that I may have covered the last time with respect to duologues was the term juxtapositions. But now that I thought about this some more, well, let me first read you how it can be defined. So it's one definition that I found online. It's the act or an instance of placing two or more things side by side, often to compare or contrast or create an interesting effect. Now, you also, you refer to the duologues as pairs, right? So, I mean, that's a more neutral term, maybe. I don't know. But I'm just curious, would you, I mean, I like the concept of juxtapositions, but I don't know if it really fully encompasses, umbrellas that body of work. Is that just kind of going a little bit into the nuance here of the semantics, but
so
just curious.
The idea of side by side for sure is part of each pair. I mean, are they opposites?
Mm-hmm.
maybe in terms of like a yin yang idea, there's some pairs where in my head it was kind of like a yin yang, so that would be an opposite. So I think some of them, I mean, they're all side by side, so yes, there are a juxtaposition. So I think it's okay in a wider sense to say they are.
But you, like the people who wrote about your work, they're not necessarily talking, they're not using that term, so, or haven't, as far as you know, or?
I don't think so. It's more of a, how they kind of lyrically connect, or loosely connect.
Yep.
But that can be a juxtaposition.
Because you... Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it might be a nuance. Sorry, it was a little bit a nuanced question, but I was just curious about how you think about it and if that. But yeah, I like the idea of, I mean, just the pairs keeps it more neutral. I mean, there's always there's a comparison potentially, right? That maybe makes sense, or some sort of a, there's a relationship.
There's a relationship,
right? For sure.
There's always a relationship.
Yeah.
And that relationship changes from pair to pair.
Yeah.
It can be loose, it can be tight, it can be formal, it can be informal.
Yep. So that brings me to another maybe weird question about the title picture. So I'm just curious because, and I haven't seen the book physically, right? So I just saw does the title actually have, eventually when you open up the back side of the book, I guess, the back panel, whatever they call it, is the other one also there or not?
Yeah. So the back side is the pair. Okay.
Oh, the pair is there. Okay.
So got the front cover is one, and the back side is the pair. But also the front side is a pair, is a couple.
That's what I noticed that. So that's why I wanted to bring it up.
It's the interaction of two people.
Yep.
Now, there is ambiguity, as you know, I said before, I want to keep it open, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I should give it away or not. I feel like people should look.
People should look at it.
Exactly.
We're not going to give it away right now, but it is cool. No, I thought it was very clever to have this as a title picture. I'm sure you guys thought about, maybe there were other candidates.
Yeah, I mean,
the
title is again like one of those book parts. For some reason, I start out with thinking, oh, I just want like some words. Mm-hmm. And my publisher's like, it's a photo book. I'm like, oh no, now I have to open myself up to showing this to the world. And this was something that was suggested early on. And initially I was like, that's bold. You know, am I that bold in terms of, is my work about boldness? But then, you know, the idea of the dialogue between two, and that it's two people, there was really not anything else that was kind of inviting you to explore this.
No, I agree. We'll encourage our listeners to check that out, and that brings me to, actually, that's a nice lead-in to, where can people best find you, and then also the book.
So the book, I'm selling them through my website, signed copies of them. You can buy them through the Kera website anywhere in the world, really. Okay. I think they do free shipping. You can buy them on Amazon. I think you can buy them on Barnes and Nobles. In the US, they're not available until April 4th. In Europe, it's available now. But I do have copies. I mean, as I said, they're supposed to come tomorrow. So I will start shipping my copies, the signed copies. So,
That's very cool. That's very cool.
Available everywhere, truly.
Yeah.
Please buy.
Yes. Please buy a lot of them.
Holiday presents.
It's perfect Christmas present.
Exactly.
Maybe not for children, but
maybe let me hear back.
And your web, can you
Yes, you can purchase it. I have your
website address too.
Yep.
What's that?
Oh, it's Nina Kling Photography. And when you open it, you'll see the book, and there's a link to the book. It's there's super easy.
Yep. Okay.
It's super easy to order.
Okay. Well, good. Well, this is kind of wrapping up. We kind of covered really a very good range, and it was great to catch up.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Really. Yeah. And congratulations on your book. Very happy for you. And really encourage our listeners to go check out your website, your Instagram, and then also the book. And
And send comments and make comments
and
about,
comments
yes,
and
I'm
interact.
Curious. That'd
be
wonderful.
Awesome. And Nina, thanks so much for being on
Thank
Creative
you.
Photography.
Always a pleasure and always fun talking to you. I really enjoy our conversations.
Likewise. Thank you very much. All right, this wraps up our episode with Nina Welsh Kling. I hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was great to talk about the creative process of creating your own book and some other topics. And so we'll have the information for Nina's book linked in the show notes. As always, you can also go to ninaklingphotography.com. Her last name is spelled K-L-I-N-G. And you should be able to find, obviously, her work, but also a link to purchase the book if you're inclined to do so. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for all the support, and talk to you next time.